Hi everybody, welcome to the last episode of season one of the Book Chain Project. This week Kate Gilby-Smith is interviewing Sade for Dupé, and her beautiful picture books are on display for everybody to enjoy, especially as one is all about snow and we're coming up to the winter season, and I know that we're going to be thinking about Christmas presents, so that one's for your list. I will see you on the other side and we will talk a little bit more about what's coming up next year. Bye for now.
Hello everybody, my name is Kate Gilby-Smith and this is this week's episode of the Book Chain Project. I am the author of a book called The Astonishing Future of Alex Nobody, which is here. And last week I was interviewed by the fantastic Melissa Welliver, who is the author of The Undying Tower. And this week I have the pleasure of interviewing Sade Fadepe, who is the author of Snowy Joy, which is such a wonderful, Christmassy, beautiful book. And I'm so looking forward to chatting with her. We tried to have this conversation yesterday. The Book Chain Project interviews are normally on a Wednesday at this time. But there were some Instagram issues which are kind of happening across the board. And so I couldn't add Sade in. So I'm really hoping that those problems will have resolved. And any moment Sade will be joining us. For anyone who doesn't know about the book project, it was started by Kitty Kettle. And the idea is that authors interview authors. And so, as I said last week, I was interviewed by Melissa Welliver. This week, I'm interviewing Sade Fadepe. And the week after that, she will be interviewing somebody else. I can see that Sade has joined, so I'm going to see if I can add her in. And fingers crossed that it works this time. Please cross your fingers with me. There we go, hopefully that's working. We will see. Just bear with me as hopefully this works. I'll just wait a few minutes. For anybody who doesn't know, the Book Chain Project, it's been going, I think, since the beginning of the year, and there are just so many fantastic authors who have been interviewed on there. Oh, Sade's joining.
Hello.
Hi, welcome.
We made it. We made it. We made it.
I'm so delighted. For a second there, I thought, oh no, it's going to happen again.
Oh, I felt for you yesterday, honestly. For you.
It was scary enough kind of starting in Instagram Live, and then I hadn't quite figured out what I was going to say while I was trying to make it work, but I'm glad we've got there in the end and now we can chat.
Yes, we can.
Thanks to everyone who's been bearing with us. It's going to be worth the wait. So I'm very excited to chat to you about Snowy Joy.
Thank you.
I should just launch in, I think, with a question. Can you tell us a little bit about yourself and just give us a brief overview of Snowy Joy?
Okay. So my name is Sade Fadepe. We're authors. I write for primary school age, picture books, middle grades, and I'm a teacher by profession, but I fell in love with stories and writing when I met Quentin Blake.
I'm so jealous you got to meet Quentin Blake. How did that happen?
Well, I was working at a school in Nunhead, and he came along as an illustrator. Mm-hmm. But I was fascinated by his stories, you know, and so from then on, I kind of thought, there could be something in here for me. But, you know, we never really see ourselves in, you know, in this light. So it took me, I think, probably a good 12 years to actually brave it and, you know, just pen my first story. And I went out to live in Nigeria for a bit and as a teacher trainer back then. As I was preparing resources for the teachers, I kind of thought, this is a bit foreign. You know, we're using the British National Curriculum. We're using, you know, content from foreign places. And I thought, why can't I create something that's more relevant to their experiences? So I gave it a try. It took a good couple of years, a good few years, but eventually, by the time we relocated back to England, the book was ready. It was ready to be published there. It was ready to be published here. So it was a lovely homecoming for me.
Oh, wow, fantastic. And how do you think your experiences as a teacher, and also I know you were a linguist before that, how have those experiences kind of affected your storytelling?
Well, I think if I knew that I was going to go into writing when I made the choice between literature or linguistics, I probably would have chosen literature. Mm-hmm. But I was fascinated by script and I wanted to learn a new language. So I chose Arabic, the Arabic script, which I just had a fascination for anything that wasn't the alphabet, the typical alphabet. So I spent 3 years learning Arabic. And I really was quite keen on getting a master's in it, but that didn't happen. So my experience as a teacher and, you know, being a linguist and, you know, knowing how words work and how relevant they are to certain age groups has all helped. They've all helped in, you know, being, you know, the little author that I am.
I'm always quite jealous of children's authors who were teachers before, because you get to really see how children respond to books, and you obviously get a great overview of the books that are being published and the books they love. Did you kind of have that experience as well?
So the one thing that I missed when I came away from mainstream teaching was the daily experience of sharing stories with children. And sometimes things would happen at the end of a school day and it would be a mad rush and you can't get a story in. Those were disappointing days for me. Any day that I couldn't read a story at the end of the day, that was like, you probably shouldn't have gone to work. So my love for children's books and my love for just seeing children sit around me listening to a story, it's just something that I can't compare to anything else. So when I go forth to schools, that's the one thing that I look out for. It's mainly just having these kids in front of me and being mesmerized by the stories or by the illustrations or by predicting what might happen, getting to talk about the blurb, talking about the cover, mm-hmm. before actually delving into the story proper.
Yeah, amazing. You learn so much from that process. I'd love to ask you a bit about Snowy Joy, which I absolutely loved reading. I think it's reading it because it's, you know, just ahead of Christmas, it's pretty cold today, so it really gets you in the mood for Christmas and what's around the corner. And I love the journey that the main character goes on, and the kind of lessons she learns along the way, and the blend of kind of Nigerian culture with the kind of British Christmas traditions. I'd love to ask you a bit about how you came up with the idea for the book, and how it's become the book it is today.
Okay, so as I knew you were going to ask this question, so I prepared myself not to get emotional. Round about the time we prepared to return to England, there was an unfortunate situation close to my children's school, and which was a bit traumatic for them. They didn't see the actual incident, but in driving them home, we could see the black smoke and, you know, some of the things that I talk about mm-hmm. in the book, we could actually see. Yeah. So there had been a bomb blast close to their school and we could see, you know, they could see it. And when we came, the one thing that bothered them was, Mum, we can leave because we were born here, you know, we're British. But what about them? You know, and so there was that element of guilt that I noticed that they were experiencing. Mm. And I had to find a way of putting it into words. Mm. I had to find a way of comforting them mm. and explaining, it's not their fault. This is who you are. You know, we went to spend time out there. And yes, you've made relationships. And, you know, the relationships are still very strong relationships, but you know, your mom's always been a dual citizen. I've always, you know, I was born here, and my parents took me to Nigeria, and I did the same for my kids. So they had to understand the balance between, you know, being here and being there, you know. So that was what led to Snowy Joy. And especially because when we did come back, they actually got more news about, you know, it was around the Syrian war, you know, that was round about the time that we came, it was in 2014. So it wasn't as if, there's almost like, so yeah, we left there, we're here, and we're hearing more about destruction than when we were there. So it was almost like, you know, we haven't actually run away. We're actually still in the process of understanding what's going on within the world. So it was just my way of helping them make sense, and probably helping other children have conversations with their parents and talk about what they hear in the news and what they might hear at school or what their friends, you know, and then probably if they come across children who have had that experience, what do we do, what do they, how, you know, it's empathy.
Yeah, that's amazing. I really got that sense reading the book, because you explore those themes through a child's kind of perspective. I don't want to give too much away or any spoilers, but there are things they kind of witness that the main character Dana thinks is you know, a toys, or it's a kind of not, you know, not really happening, and actually that is really happening, and so she kind of comes to understand what's going on. I wonder if you could just explain to people watching the kind of the story of the book without giving too much away, how the main character finds herself on a plane coming to traveling from Nigeria to St Albans.
So it's a story about Adana who lives in Nigeria and, you know, is excited. She's never experienced snow before. She's seen it in movies. She's even seen it on the TV. She's seen it in stories. But she's never actually experienced the snow. And this has been a lifelong dream. So when her uncle invites her over for Christmas, it's like, oh, wow, thank you, a million thank yous, uncle. And she's excited. Not knowing that her family logistics had changed, her parents were now both self-employed and they had to run their own business, so they weren't able to take her. And this is where her trauma begins. And, you know, but luckily she's got the grandmother, you know, whom we refer to as her rock. And but along the line, you know, there seem to be more things that unfold that make her think at some point, I wish I'd stay back home. I'm going to miss all my family. I'm going to miss the parents, the presents. I'm going to miss my family. I'm going to miss the Christmas parties, the weddings that happen at Christmas, the masquerades, the drummers, the Christmas carols. And there's just so much that she starts to think about, and she really just wants to go back home. So without giving anything away.
About all of that, about the Nigerian traditions at Christmas, that she gets her wish that, you know, to go to St Albans and see the snowy Christmas, but then the kind of reality of that and feeling kind of torn between those two things, kind of fantastic to read about.
And in a way, symbolic of, you know, much as the story is, it's fiction, but every time I look at it, I kind of see similarities, you know, me being torn between two cultures, between two languages, and yet we overcome them, you know, so it's, there's symbolisms there, but that weren't intentional.
Yeah, it's amazing how that, I think I've experienced that two things come out in writing that have been in the kind of back of your mind or kind of important to you, and then you see them coming out in your writing and you think, oh, I didn't do that on purpose, but that's kind of what happened, which is amazing. I wanted to ask you a bit about the main character Adana, and she has been experienced bullying at school, and she for her accent, which is considered a bit of a strange accent, she's traveled so much. And she feels like she doesn't quite fit in. Why did you want to explore a character who feels that way?
I don't know. Adana comes natural to me. So there are three main tribes. There are hundreds of tribes in Nigeria. But in terms of region, we're always referred to having three regions, the Igbo, the Hausa, and the Yoruba region. And she's from the Igbo region. I'm not. But I wanted to choose a name that was that I could relate to, because I've got a lot of friends that are from that region. And she comes across to me as, I don't want to say a mini version of myself. Mm-hmm. I just want to, she's a character that has been created with all the different characters that I know. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, when I write, I pump all my characters into this one person. So she could be so many things in so many places and, you know, different points in time. So here she's 10 years old. She loves the snow. She hates the newspapers. She's a bit cheeky. She can be impatient. And she, you know, she's a bit of an exaggeratist. You know, so yeah, that's who she is.
It's so interesting how characters can be formed, because a character can, well, I find it can have lots of myself in it in various aspects, but then, you know, a mixture of lots of people you know, they go beyond kind of recognition, but they're going to have to be a little bit of lots of people. Mm-hmm. But they're always going to have, well, for me, they always have a kind of a shade of myself in there that I kind of recognise. I wanted to ask you, you were mentioning about how Adana kind of doesn't like newspapers. She doesn't want to hear about the news and the kind of the bad things. And I'm sure loads of children will really relate to that. And also relate to her parents kind of not wanting to, you know, switching off the channel when it's the news and there are kind of terrible things that are happening. I wanted to ask you about how you go about kind of approaching those kind of issues. There are issues of kind of war and various other things. How do you go about approaching that in the book and also with children in events and things that you do?
Basically, it's a conversation starter, and everyone would have their own experiences. Mm. So we usually start with what you know, which is always the best way. What you know and how you've experienced it. Have you had anyone close to you that's been in such a situation? And if they haven't, then we rely on the secondary resources. We rely on the news. What do we hear from the news? How can we translate it? But in the book, that, you know, we refer to it as broken toys. Mm. So she looks around and says, I see a million broken toys. And, you know, bearing in mind that it's Christmas, so, you know, it's almost as if we have to tweak it, you know, not put it in their faces and, you know, just tweak it and just, you know, what would a child think if, you know, if the trains were off their tracks, or what would they think if there are animals in the cages? You know, what could you do about it? How would it make you feel? There's a lot of empathy that we, you know, embrace going through the topics. The interesting topics really that we delve into easily are the ones about pollution, you know, about global warming and how all these different elements affect our lives. Those are the easier topics to go into, you know. So we talk about the ocean, we talk about the air, we talk about water. So there's so much to talk about.
Yeah, that's amazing. And on that front, I wanted to ask about some of the responses you've had to the book so far from children who have read it, or children you've kind of met at events and things. I can imagine whether it's a child reading it with their parent, there are so many questions that come up. I wanted to ask about that experience for you so far.
It's funny because when parents tell me that they've read it over days as a bedtime story, I kind of, how have you managed that? And what interests me the most is how much children already know. Mm-hmm. You know, so these are the kind of topics we just want to put to the side and not talk about, and probably switch off the channels, which is what I was doing, yeah. You know. They know so much. And unless we talk about it, unless they hear our perspective about it, even when they hear about such topics in school, they still don't make those connections. So it's important for families to have these conversations about, you know, if they come across anything on the news that they know their child has seen, it's important to, you know, nip in the bud there and then. Because I know that my youngest had started to get stressed and frustrated. I think it was about 10, 11 then. And we had to have these conversations.
Yeah, I that reminds me what you're saying there of something in the book where all the adults on the plane are having a conversation about what's going on and about kind of very tough things like war, and the grandmother thinks that Dana's asleep, but she's not, and she's been listening to all of it. And it's kind of the same thing. We kind of underestimate how much children pick up and know and also want to talk about.
Very true.
I'd love to ask you a little bit about just writing in general and why writing for children particularly appeals to you.
For starters, I get to see them. I get to go into schools. I get to, you know, go back into classrooms. And also, I think subconsciously, it's something that I probably always wanted to do. I'd say that it comes natural.
Yeah.
My primary teaching experiences kind of lured me into becoming a children's writer without me knowing it. I think I'd been teaching for 12 years when I wrote my first script.
Yeah. And can I ask you a bit, what was that process like when you first got published? How did it happen?
Oh, I'd say just like Snowy Joy, I'd say it was magical.
Yeah.
it's magical. So I'd, as I'd said earlier, I was taking a teacher training program, and I wanted to take something indigenous into the session the next day. So I'd scripted, overnight I'd scripted this, this fun ABC story, and I was so excited. I was going to take it into the training session and show them. I said, look, this is how you can use indigenous content. But lo and behold, I left it at home. So I was a bit disappointed with myself. And then exactly 2 weeks later, I went for an autism seminar and sat next to, he sat next to me, a lovely doctor, Dr. Eaton. He, you know, he's Caucasian, but was working in Nigeria then. And we just got chatting, and they said, what do you do? I said, I'm a teacher. And they said, oh, but I just wrote a script. And they said, oh, really? I know a publisher that's just set up. And, you know, I said, oh, really? Said, yeah, Cassava Republic. And I'm thinking, oh, wow, okay, let's make the connection. And within 6 months, I'd signed a contract.
Wow.
And when I met Cassava, the director, she said, I've always wanted to publish or, you know, to create an Abecedarian book. So this might just be the one. And lo and behold, she loved it.
Oh, wow. And the rest is history. And what was the experience like? How was it different making Snowy Joy to a fun ABC?
Very different, very different. I think with Snowy Joy is, I think because it's got that personal element, even though I told my publisher that I was writing in mid-grade, I kind of like, yes, but no. I wanted to keep it to myself. I wanted to gain control, probably, you know, especially being traditionally published with the first book. I wanted to have an element of control over this one. I wanted to be able to do whatever I want to do with it, whenever I wanted to. But there are also certain salient issues within there that I just think are not yet resolved. So even though it's out in the world, in a way, I still feel that I have an element of control over it. But the one thing that I haven't said is the lady who comes in to support the children is representative of my foster mom. So I'd lived with my foster mom for 3 months, and I didn't actually realize that until I revisited her when I was about 25. And she said, she's talking to a friend of hers. I said, oh, I've had her since she was 3 months. And I'm thinking, oh, I didn't know that. I thought I'd gone to live with her when I was about one. You know, so my brother had been there before me, a lovely English family in Rovenden. My brother had gone to live there, and my parents took me to meet him. And so we lived with her for about 6-7 years, and that was our home. So when we went to live in Nigeria, it was very strange, very different. And we got used to it, but there was always that homesickness. There was always that draw.
That's fantastic to know, because I can really see those themes coming out in the book, and I can tell it's such a personal story. All of those kind of emotions feel, kind of come across so strongly. Fantastic. I also wanted to ask you a little bit about the wonderful illustrations. So you can see the front cover and the inside, just wonderful illustrations that children will love looking at by themselves, or if they're reading it with a parent, they can talk about it and it really adds to the story. What was that process like of working with the illustrator? There we go.
So there were two illustrators that worked on the book. The person who did the front cover is called Tayo, and he's based in the UK. He's a massive renowned artist. You just need to look at his profile. He's out there in the world. So I was really lucky to be pinned him down to say, look, I want you to do my book cover. And he had to, within his busy schedule, he had to sit down and go through the entire book, because I needed him to reflect on the emotions within the story. And by the time he got that, it was that we were both so happy. Now, the illustrator who did the internal illustrations, he's the same illustrator that did the Fun ABC. And he's Fun ABC has been acclaimed in the US. And it was last year, got about three notables within the USA. One was for the Mock Cardinal Awards, which is the oldest children's picture book illustration award in the United States. But it's called the Mock Cardinal if you're not based in the US, or if you're not based in the US, or if your publisher is not based in the US. So if they don't know where you've come from, or if they don't know about you, then you could get put into like a mock. And so we went through another selection process, and we were one of 10 books, throughout the USA, which is really good. And from there, I think there were certain other notables. So the book got mentioned quite a bit in America last year. So yes, I've been very fortunate to have two amazing illustrators work with me.
Oh, that's fantastic. I love hearing about the process of working together, because I know it's such a close relationship, and in order to kind of represent the story you've told, you really need to work closely together. And it's just a kind of a beautiful book that you've created. We're almost out of time, but I just wanted to ask you two more things. What was your kind of greatest hope when writing Snowy Joy? What kind of effect do you want it to have on those children who read it?
I think empathy being the biggest one. Mm-hmm. Empathy and conversations. Empathy, conversation. So the conversation, the healing comes with the conversations. Before the healing comes the empathy. So so at the end, when she says, I'm happy that, I'm grateful, that, without telling too much, that is her reflecting and, realizing that actually there's some people that have to live through this on a daily basis. And it's, and children need to know. So there's that element of, understanding that, yes, your life might be fine, mm-hmm. might be fantastic, you might have everything in the world, but there are some children who do not. So that element of empathy.
That's amazing. I think, empathy is the most important thing with children's writing, and what it kind of encourages children to develop. And as you say, there'll be so many questions and things to think about for any child or adult who reads the book. And that's just a totally wonderful thing. And finally, I just want to ask you about what you're working on now. Are you writing anything at the moment? Have you got anything in the pipeline?
I do. I think I can't wait to get back to carrying on with Snowy Joy part two. Mm. I can't wait. That's, you know, that had started, but along the line, because I had certain delays with Bouncy 1, 2, 3, I started writing an animal series. So I've got an animal series in the making. I'm through 1.5. And you know, with animal books, you need a couple, you know, you need a couple in the kitty before you can say, right, there you are, I've, you know, this is it. So I'd like to pitch those. I hope to pitch those to, you know, through an agent, only because, you know, I like experimenting. I've done the traditional publishing, I've done the self-publishing. Next would be to get an agent. I just want to explore and understand what everyone else is doing, but in my own time. But I've also got a twee, I'll call it a twee. I won't call it a pandemic story. I'll call it a historical fiction that's got an element of what happened last year. So it's not really to do. So it's just, it's historical fiction, and it's twee. It's for 4 to 5 year olds, a picture book, and I'm excited about that one.
Oh, wow.
So I've got two books due next year. Two books to come next year,
and then more beyond as well in the plans. Wow, you've got lots in the works. That's really exciting. Where can people buy Snowy Joy? It's on Amazon.
It's on Amazon, and at my website shadizone.com, and you can just on my Instagram, my links are there. And I would be in touch with anyone that has. I've got a program coming up from the 1st to the 3rd of December where I'm going to read the entire Snowy Joy in 3 days.
Oh, wow.
And but in what we call griot style. In griot style. So I'm not just going to do a read. There's going to be rhythm. There's going to be drums. There's going to be music. There's going to be poetry. So bringing all the artistic dimensions into Snowy Joy from the 1st to the 3rd of December. So if anyone wants to come, yes, let me know. The link's in my bio, my Instagram bio.
Brilliant. So go to the link on your Instagram bio and your website, and that can all be found there. And everyone can watch all of the BookChain project interviews on YouTube, Spotify, and on various authors' Instagram accounts. Thank you so much, Charlotte. It's been such a lovely conversation. And
thank you, Kate. You've been amazing. Thank you.
Wonderful. Thank you so much. And thanks, everyone, for watching.
Thank you so much, Sade. That was such an interesting interview. I loved hearing all about your influences and inspirations for Snowy Joy.
Thank you.
Great. And we now have just a few quick fire questions that I'm going to fire at you, then we will be finished. So whenever you're ready, I will start firing the questions at you. Okay. So as a writer, what would you choose as your mascot, avatar, or spirit animal? And it can't be anything from one of your books.
Spirit animal would be a rabbit.
Very nice.
Funny rabbit.
Okay, and could you share with us your top writing tip?
I'd say scribble your ideas. Don't call it writing, because, you know, writing can be a bit technical, so I'd say just do a bit of scribbling.
I love that. That's brilliant. I do lots of scribbling myself. Okay, and if you could only eat one meal and one drink, what would it be?
It would be biscuits and cranberry juice.
Oh, what a lovely combination.
Ginger nut biscuits and cranberry juice.
Ginger nut biscuits. Oh, amazing. I've got some ginger and chocolate biscuits in the cupboard that I bought this afternoon, so... making me think of those.
I could come over.
Yeah. Just need to get some cranberry juice in. Okay, and next question, Marvel or DC?
Marvel.
I said the same. So, good choice. Snap. Okay, and Bugs Bunny or Mickey Mouse?
I'd say, it's a tricky one. I love both. Bugs Bunny.
Nice. Good choice. Okay, and this is quite a hard one, I think. What three books, if you could only take three books to a desert island, or if you could give them to an alien, what would those books be?
Three books. Actually, I've got one that I am meant to be finishing off. I haven't started it. It's an awesome book by reaching out, touching high. New Daughters of Africa by Margaret Busby. I'd also take a book called Imagine This by Sade Adeniran. She's probably not someone that you know, but she, because I'd read so much foreign stuff, when we lived in Nigeria, hers was the first contemporary fiction that I actually read. And she made me more interested in Indigenous content. And last one would be, which I have bought, but I haven't read it, is Drumroll Americana by Chimamanda Adichie. Got it at home, but Christmas, I'm going to read it. It's been a long time coming, so it's high time I read it.
Oh, amazing. Great choices. I love Americana.
Have you read it?
I have, yeah. I really enjoyed it. It's fantastic.
So you beat me to that one.
Well, you have to let me know. We can talk about it after you've read it.
Certainly, certainly.
Thank you so much. I've had loads of fun chatting to you.
Oh, thank you. It's been the same.
Thanks, Sade. Thanks, Kate. That was the last episode of season one of the Book Chain Project. I'm really grateful for every author that's taken part and given their time and given their passion to being part of this journey over the last year. The chain will continue next year. We do have authors who will be taking part, but we're going to take a break for a few months so that I can finish my second novel and that we can all catch up on the fantastic interviews that we've got to listen to. So I hope you found this series really useful and really interesting, and that you found some new authors to love and some new books to share. This is my debut book, The Boy I Am. My name is K.L. Kettle. And as I'm recording this, I found out today that my novel has been nominated for the 2022 Carnegie Awards. It's huge, and I'm really grateful for everybody who put me forward. I'll be doing a special video about that on my channel. If you look up K.L. Kettle, you'll find that. But for now, we're going to take a break, and I'll see you for season 2.